So, is the recording on already?
Yes. But
Excellent. I think we can get started. Today we will talk about data classification and then purview as a tool to doing those classifications. I will start with some basics and background about how do we classify and label data and why, and which classes do we have. And then Teijo and Timo will talk a bit more about the technical details, about the purview tool and how does it affect your daily life and your possibilities to process files. We will record the presentations, and after the presentations have been given, the recording will be stopped and there will be time for questions. You can write your questions to the chat, or you can ask them afterwards. So please keep your microphones muted until the presentations have been finished. All right, so I'll start with the data classification basics. What classes do we have, and what kind of information belongs to those classes? And even before going to those details, I think it's useful to give some background information of why the classification is being done and why is it necessary. The reasoning behind this is that university as a public institution has some legal obligations to process data properly. They come from Act on Openness of Government Activities, Julkisuuslaki in Finnish, and also from data protection legislation, and also from Tiedonhallintalaki, Act on Information Management in Public Administration. So we are under legal obligation to process data properly and taking into account its nature. Some data might be a secret and some data is not. And these obligations apply regardless of whether we formally classify data or use any tools. And the basic idea is that every employee should know what kind of data they are processing and where that data can be processed and how it can be published or forwarded to external partners or internally within the university. And to make things easier, we have created these classes and labels so that when a person draws a conclusion about the nature of particular information, this conclusion can be recorded and forwarded to other people processing similar information. So that kind of estimation doesn't have to be repeatedly done. And we have now technical solutions, the purview tool, which ensure that this assessments will be done and they will be carried forward to your colleagues. One essential thing to understand also is that the classification may change over time. When you first start processing a new issue, it might be confidential, but when things go on and time passes on, things might become public when the decision has been made and it's time to inform the university community. So please keep in mind that once labeled, the file might not stay in the same label forever. Here are the classes we have, or categories. There are five main classes, and further two categories have subclasses. I think most of the people who have been involved in the in the pilot already have seen this. Private is a new class we introduced pretty much as the first measure when trying to plan this pilot. It was obvious that there is some information processed in the university information management systems, which is not related to work duties. So we wanted to give an option to label data as private, which is not related to your work duties, and what belongs to your duties might or is connected to what your duties are. So if you are hired because you should prepare a dissertation, then this draft dissertation is not private. But if a person who works in the administration happens to have a dissertation draft which is being prepared during her free time, if that draft is saved on university information management systems, then it can be private. And here are further examples as well. Then there's the public class, which is further divided in two subcategories, open and public by law. Open is something that can be shared to anyone and published online as well. And then public by law is something that is public in principle, but in all cases we don't want to actively promote and disseminate certain information. So that kind of information must be given to someone who requests it, but we don't actively publish it. And sometimes making the estimate public by law can be complicated, especially in borderline cases. But we wanted to have this label so we don't lose the conclusions once made. So people will know that even though this seems to be slightly on the border of containing business secrets, it actually doesn't. So that kind of a label can be made. And public by law cannot contain any personal information which has some limitations regarding the recipients. Internal is something that can be available university-wide to employees and grant researchers, and it's under discretion whether this can be provided outsiders as well. But these internal matters will not include any such information which is confidential by law. One thing you have to consider when you use the label internal is that is this matter already let's say public enough so I can label it internal when I'm starting to prepare it, or should I label it confidential in the preparation stage, and when it's ready to be published and communicated to the university community, then switch labels to internal. So these things you have to consider. Some issues are not harmful to be communicated already on the preparation stage, so it's easy and convenient to apply the internal label early. But in some cases you want to make sure that these plans don't get distributed before they have been decided. Then we have confidential, which is further divided in two subclasses, limited distribution and protected. Protected contains information that is confidential by law. We are under legal obligation to keep it confidential. And then it contains personal data, lists of students from our registers and things like that. But there's an exception that, for example, if you have minutes of meeting from the university board that minutes of meeting contains the list of participants and the minutes of meeting are public as such, then those individual names don't mean that the whole document should be labeled as confidential / protected. And if there's a need to distribute information belonging to the confidential / protected outside the university, you might need to assess whether the recipient has a legal right to process the personal information or data confidential by law. Limited distribution is our response to problems we encounter at the early stage of the pilot, that we noticed that a confidential label is being applied quite widely, and in some cases that confidential is not based on legal obligation, or we are not obliged to protect it technically. So confidential / limited distribution exists to signal other people that this matter is in preparation, or you should consider carefully to whom it might be distributed. And also in cases when you receive something outside the university, let's say for instance via normal email, and there's some kind of a confidentiality label, so you might apply confidential / limited distribution to the file, and then you will be able to return the file via normal email as well. And this confidential / limited distribution is often a good choice when you are preparing something new. So you have a basic idea that everyone shouldn't know about this yet, but later it might become internal or even public. Confidential / protected class had a definition that that there's information which is confidential under law, and those legal obligations mainly come from Section 24 of the Act on the Openness of Government Activities, and these are some examples of those confidential matters mentioned in that section. Research plan and students' exam answers or draft plans for theses are matters we frequently encounter, and then trade secrets of a private or public entity also occur frequently. So if you recognize these matters in your documents, then confidential / protected is the correct label. Here's my last slide and the last category, secret, which contains the most sensitive information we might process. Some of the matters confidential by law in the previously mentioned section 24 of the Act on the Openness of Government Activities have been placed in this category. For instance, university security and information security arrangements and psychological tests, contact details of people under turvakielto are so sensitive that we want to also protect them technically, and therefore they are in the secret category. Then another big mass of data which should be labeled as secret is special categories of personal data, also called as sensitive personal information. The whole list is on the slide. I'm not reading it aloud here, but health data is something we usually come across with. Then information might belong to category secret if there's a really demanding non-disclosure agreement stating that you should treat this information with strict confidence or protect it technically. Then it's good option to label it as secret. Or in any case, if you encounter really sensitive information, you might want to apply the secret category, so you'll be sure that it will be protected technically. All right, I think I have reached the end of my presentation and the matters I was supposed to talk about. So let's continue. Will it be Teijo after me who will talk a bit more about Purview, the tool we have?
Yes, thank you, Visa. And hello to everybody. I try to explain what this Purview actually is. I do not go on very detailed information, but after my presentation, Timo will supplement me with, let's say, more practical examples on how can you see the Purview in daily life. Before I go to Purview, some background. Actually, the Purview is only a tool that we can use to implement the classification on our data processing. And why are we using this Purview or started this project is that last autumn, the Council of Rectors made a decision that all the universities will apply data classification. And basically, the idea is to use similar classification so that the information sharing between the universities should be as fluent as possible and include also the classification. The idea with this Purview is just to implement it on daily life and introduce a tool that can help us to do it in practice. Purview, as is part of the Microsoft cloud services, it's of course taking into account the data that has been processed with the Microsoft tools. So the data that comes to the Purview is basically processed in email, Microsoft cloud, but also on premises if you use these Office tools, for example, and of course the user device as well, when the device is administered by university. So you can see this classification tool when you use Office tools like Word, PowerPoint, Excel, Outlook, and Teams. And of course, this then in that case the monitoring of the or the protection is limited to the Microsoft applications, data handled by managed by Microsoft applications. Something to remember is that because we all have a lot of data and files already, you might think that now we have to do the classification of all existing data, but that's not true. You don't have to do any classification until you start edit and save the files that you are processing. So you don't have to be worried about that you should go through all the data you have. We can leave them as they are, and whenever you take them to edit, you start to make the classification. If you just view the files, there is no need to make any classification. Then when you start doing this classification, it based or you do the stamping, as we say it, it does not actually affect on any permissions that the files have. Still, the permissions are managed by you when we are in the cloud environment, and you decide who can read or view or edit the files that you have. There is couple exceptions, but basically that's the basic rule that you still have the power over who can access the files. So you can give rights in OneDrive for files to somebody, or when you send an email, you can just add the attachment as a link or as a file, and then you actually give the access to the recipients. Or if you bring files to Teams group, of course, the member of the group will give the access to the files as well. The exception is this most strict protected files, which means the confidential protected class and also the secret class. There, this just the class itself already includes some restrictions what comes to sharing of the data or files. And also one thing that has been worried, you few people have been worrying, is that if you send classified files, somebody who is not part of the university, can they still read the files? Yes, they can. Actually, they don't see anything about the classification of the data that we have been doing here, because all the classification information is actually in the metadata of the files, and it's not visible for the users. For example, if you send a classified file to some of your colleagues in another Finnish university, they don't see what kind of classification you have been giving to the file. Although the actual information is included in the metadata of the file, and at this point we don't have any plans to utilize this metadata in universities. But let's see what happens after we have doing this first phase of project and take this into use in our university. Okay, what is this purview and what kind of features it includes? Of course, this data classification, which we call sensitivity labels. That is what you have been already seen or will be seen if you're not yet done it. And all those categories that we have on those labels, they are defined by our university. I mentioned that there is this decision of Council of Rectors that we would have the similar kind of classification across the universities. We have slightly changed the classes that we have in our university, but there should not be any big difference. So I'm not expecting any big problems when you have to change the information. And as I said, what comes to the labels, the recipients in other universities, they don't see the labels at all. when we have decided and defined those sensitivity labels, in some of those we have also already included some restrictions when it comes to processing of the files. Then another feature is this data protection with encryption. This is something that we have not yet studied, and we will do it later phase of the project, and let's see whether we can utilize it or not. At currently, it's not included in this purview. One major thing in purview is this data loss prevention. So based on those classes, we can create rules so that we can restrict the processing of the files, or we can monitor what is going on with files and the processing of the files. So that, for example, if files are unintentionally or intentionally sent against the rules that we have, this data loss prevention can prevent the sending of the data. In addition to those classes, we have also those so-called sensitive infotypes, which basically are just strings of what we try to find from the files that are brought to the purview. For example, we could try to identify whether the files include some Finnish social security numbers. But of course, this kind of searching of the certain things is a little bit difficult, because it most probably will produce quite a lot of so-called false positive alarms. So we are not currently, we don't have many of those put on place, only few, just to test how does it work, and let's see how we will utilize that in future. I personally think that this classification is the most important thing, and that's the, let's say, huge step already, that we start to make the classification for the data. Then of course, from monitoring point of view, we got the visibility on information with this Content Explorer, so that we can see if there is something strange happening in our data processing. This is of course based on difficult automated tools. We don't have time to just follow what is going on. Of course, if there's something strange happening, something which is against the rules, we get an alarm, and then we start to make some research what is going on. What comes to the files and their content, we do not go to the content. It has to be absolutely absolute necessity to go to the content, because it's not our task to look what is inside of the files. But in some incidents, we have to do it, and we have very limited access to those tools that can read the content of the files, and we utilize that with the strict processes, so that it's very rare that we have to see what actually is included in of the files. And of course, there is this audit log, which basically is also meant to be some kind of monitoring of what we as information security part are doing, so that we can come back at that what we have been doing has been done right and with accepted processes. There is also this data life cycle management feature, but most probably this is something that we are not going to take into use at all. But let's see. Okay, this slide is just well, first I have to say this is something that has not been yet implemented. This is something that we are aiming at. On the left side there is this classes that you already been introduced, and there in the middle there is the description of what these classes mean and what kind of data it might include. And on the right side there is those, let's say, limitations that will be based on the rules that we are creating. Currently we have only few rules that really have some effect on the file processing. But this is what we are trying to get. We as you can imagine, if the sensitivity of the file increases, we will most probably need more control on those files and what is happening in the processing of those files. But once again, this is something that we don't have yet, and we are trying to build this during this pilot phase of this project. Let's see how close we do get finally what we have been planning. Then I think it's time to give Timo possibility to explain a little bit more practically what is happening with this data loss prevention. So this is the end of my presentation.
Yes, thank you. So I will be telling you more about data loss prevention from practical point of view, starting with where you can find more information, what kind of DLP rules we have in place and how they will affect you as an end user. So first of all, where you can find more information about data loss prevention rules, we have user guide for Microsoft PureView sensitivity labels, and under there is data loss prevention. There you can find, based on the software used, what kind of DLP rules we have in place. Currently, the most of the rules that you might see are related to the secret category. So sending an email of secret category will be blocked. Uploading data labeled as secret to SharePoint is blocked without encryption. Uploading data labeled as secret to OneDrive is blocked. Trying to process secret data labeled as secret in Copilot is blocked. And trying to upload data labeled as secret to AI sites on your browser is also blocked. There's no rules, visible rules to end user in Teams or Power BI right now. This site will get updated as new rules come, so you can check this from time to time. So if you try to send email labeled as secret, it will first appear that it was sent. However, in a few moments, you will receive a message that it was blocked, and it will just show you why it was blocked, what policies it conflicted, and some message details. Then DLP also gives us tools to show policy tips. And these policy tips are something that you will likely see at the top of the document with yellow banner. Due to configuration limitations, unfortunately, these policy tips are currently only available in Finnish, but they will be available soon in English as well. So in policy tips, there will be usually more information about the label. So if you have confidential protected document, it says that confidential document sharing confidential protected document outside of OneDrive has been temporarily blocked, and you can override this block by giving a reason. So when you try to share the document either on the software or in OneDrive online, it will show you the red banner or yellow banner. And you can click on, this should be in English if you have OneDrive in English. You can click show the policy tip, and the policy tip will show you more information. And end of that policy tip, you can either report a problem to admins or override the rule. And usually you want to override the rule if you are ever able to. So here, so if you like, you need to share the document with someone in another university, you can give that reason, press send, and then after a couple of minutes, it will register the reason. And after that, if you try to share the document again, it should work. And in OneDrive Online, as in the software, the policy tips will be shown at the top of the document. And this will be available in English later. Currently, there is not too many of those overriding policies, but we'll update this site as more come. And you might see more policy tips in emails in the future, and perhaps in other sites as well. All right, so that's about it from my point of view. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I think I could compliment the previous talkers about how preview appears to the end users, because at the very early stage of the pilot, we chose the option to utilize text in the headers and footers of documents. So the labels, in addition to metadata, appeared also on the documents itself. But then we realized and got some feedback that adding a label stating confidential / restricted distribution or whatever creates some confusion when those documents are being sent outside the university. So we eliminated those header and footer texts. And the current state is that users outside the university won't see the labels because they are in the metadata. And we think that this is the better solution because it won't create any confusion outside the university, and you won't have to deal with unpleasant feelings that I'm adding some text to a document that I'm only commenting and I received outside the university. So review doesn't affect the visual layout of the document anymore.